Hello and welcome to In Conversation, a DubLab podcast where each week we will bring you interviews from the DubLab radio archives.
DubLab.com, it's Celsius Drop. It is a very rainy and abnormally rainy day in Los Angeles. In fact, pretty much any moisture in the air is an abnormally wet day in Los Angeles. But today the rivers are flowing in the streets and we have new waterways to contend with. Kind of exciting. Hope everybody stays safe out there. If you're outside of Los Angeles, hope that where you are is wonderfully wet or delightfully dry. Today, very special guest here on Celsius Drop, we have Drinks. That's Kate LeBon and Tim Presley. They just walked in the door here in the place. Very excited to have them on air today. They are playing a show this evening. We'll tell you more information about that soon. They have a new album out called Hippo Light as well. And why don't we give you a little bit of music? This one's called Real Outside from Hippo Light. Hello, it's DubLab.com. Welcome. That was Real Outside from Hippo Light on Drag City. Drinks. Yay. And it is getting real outside here in Los Angeles. As I mentioned, it's rainy. It's abnormally rainy. Usually it really doesn't rain. So it's a fun change of the atmosphere. And we're going to change the atmosphere in your ears right now as we have Drinks, Kate LeBon, and Tim Presley here on air. How are you guys doing?
Good, thank you. Yeah.
Thanks for bravely forging through the LA streets to get here.
It's nice. It feels like home to me, you know.
Is it? So, yes, I imagine it's rainier in Wales than it would be.
Yeah, here. This is like a Welsh summer.
Yeah,
it's glorious. Yeah,
you didn't wear your bikini today.
Underneath, ready. Yeah,
I did as well. don't worry. Well, I'm thrilled to have you guys here, and the new album is so wonderful. Love it so much. We are here on an auspicious occasion too, because you are performing this evening in Los Angeles. We'll give more scoop on that later, but it's happening at Pico Union Project, mm-hmm. and people can, it's all ages, so bring your babies and enjoy some drinks. Pico Union Project. And you have a brand new album out as well, Tim, that just came out a couple days ago, right?
Oh, a song came out.
A song came out, okay.
And a video, but the record comes out January 25th.
Okay, so people have to wait a little bit. I have to feed Larry's hawk.
Yes.
So exciting.
Yeah. I'm very excited about it.
So I should get you a chair. I don't mind a little noise on the radio. Do you want to sit down?
Actually, standing feels really good.
You feel good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like you need the coffee to kick in or something. Huh?
Yeah.
I feel like you should give us a speech or something.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit, a little monologue.
Tell us three things about yourself.
Yeah. What would be three?
What are my main influences?
I don't know. Are you asking me?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's coffee, cigarettes, and
sleep.
No.
It's good to balance it out with sleep. But don't smoke while you're sleeping.
No, it's dangerous. That would be very dangerous.
What do you think the most obvious, what do you think the most obvious misconception would be? If you walked into a room, what do you think people might think about you?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think they'd think, oh, that's a funny looking guy. But I bet you he's very nice.
Oh, really?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Actually, it's probably the opposite. Can we swear on this?
But it's not a misconception, right? Oh no, you're sorry. The funny part maybe is not a misconception. I didn't mean, I just called you a funny looking guy.
Yeah.
The funny looking guys, that's a misconception.
Yeah, I have no idea. That's a really good question. Obviously, I can't answer it.
I feel. Maybe, can I answer it?
Yeah, you may.
Yeah.
You're not as grumpy as you may appear.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
You don't look that grumpy.
Really?
No.
That's good.
I've met some really grumpy people.
Haven't you told me that when you've met people at bars and they are fans and they talk to you, they go, God, you're really nice.
Yeah. Well, I think I have a lot of people also have asked me if I was doing okay. I guess sometimes I have a face where it looks like I'm angry, maybe. Mm.
Do you think are you thinking? Are you just relaxed?
I'm just me.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's all you can
and
be.
And that's all I can really be. Yeah.
Just be yourself.
Yeah.
What would be the thing that walking into a room you would want people to know about you? Now we'll point over to Kate.
Oh, no.
Oh.
So if you went into the room and you said, okay, you know, people might think this about me, but here's the thing. This is the real me. This is the thing that I want to throw out there as a tether.
Hmm. I don't know. I like to hide when I'm away. So I don't want anyone to know anything.
Mm.
Yeah, you're very stealthy.
Thank you. I've noticed.
Yeah.
That orange hat's actually a balaclava you can pull down.
In a giant yellow hat, I try and be stealthy. Yeah.
So do you think that in the music you make together, are you being stealthy, or is that a place that you can be the real you? And does the real you get compounded and magnified by having two yous together?
Mm, I think we're both quite similar in that we are quite, I don't know if guarded is the right word, but what's been nice about doing drinks together and collaborating together is that we've been able to kind of shut out everything exterior and just kind of exist in a little bubble, especially on Hippolyte, where we went to, you know, the middle of nowhere and kind of forgot about everything outside of the, you know, little mill and the river. And it was it was nice, wasn't it? And
where was this?
In the south of France, in underneath the Cevennes National Park. In a town called Sanipoli de Fort, which is next to a village called Suave, where Robert Crumb lives.
That's the thing. When I walk into a room, most people think Suave.
Yeah.
Or full does circle. He use Suave?
Yeah, exactly. I smell it.
Yeah, I smell it on him.
Was it a place that you guys had been to before, or was there
never been?
No, I think we felt like we wanted to. I mean, we'd both moved. I'd moved back to the UK, I think, at that point, and we knew we wanted to kind of make another drinks record, so it was felt like it would be nice to go somewhere. I guess we just thought rural Europe, and it was either rural Germany or rural France, and we didn't really care where. So Bob, our good friend and booking agent, just put the feelers out and said, look, I found this mill for you in this town in France. I don't really know much else, and we went okay, and then we just packed. I packed the car, picked you up from Heathrow, and we drove for like 12 hours down to this amazing, you know, got there in the dark, and when we woke up we were like, oh my god, this is insane. It was like a dream, you know.
Did you have to bring all the recording equipment?
And set up, and then
so was there a first step of scoping out the kind of main recording space, or were you utilizing the whole kind of grounds for recording?
I mean,
a little bit of both, actually.
Yeah, it was a big living space, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And there was no telly or anything to distract us, no internet, no, our phones didn't work, which was, you know, horrific for the first couple of days. And we were walking into the village to try and get Wi-Fi you know, thinking, oh my god, I bet everyone's trying to get in touch with me. And then you get into the village and you've got one email from Expedia, rate your
credit
experience
karma.
Like, oh yeah, maybe this is really nice. And so
but the house was it was like opening up a present, and it's the best present you ever had. Mm. I remember being like shocked at how big it was, how much room there was, and just how rustic it all looked. Mm. You know,
it was kind of the nitty gritty, wasn't it? There was nothing, there were no luxuries or anything, so it had this romantic feel of, you know, a house where you'd make a record, and you know, there were, it was very basic, but you know, it
like
was,
you know, the back of Leonard Cohen, Bird on a Wire. You know the back cover with the, I guess his wife maybe at the time, on the typewriter? You know, it's so simple and, and it looks so nice and inviting and poetic, actually. It kind of was like that, but a house.
Did it, because, I mean, it seems like that place had such a vibe to it.
Yeah.
Did you already have an idea of what this record would be going into? Were the songs written, or was it fully from the moment you arrived, you made it?
Yeah, from scrap, I think.
Yeah, but I think we knew, you know, in saying that we wanted to go somewhere isolated in Europe, we kind of had a feel of, you know, and it was the perfect place for that, where it was very much
I have a frog in my throat.
So it's nice to have an amplification of already kind of a glimmer of a notion, and then to be able to probably kind of grow into it through a space.
Find the perfect space and have this existence where, you know, I'd wake up in the morning thinking I'd be in the house by myself, and Tim would be at the kitchen table painting, drinking coffee. He'd been to the bakery to get croissant. It was like, it was definitely a French Tim, wasn't there?
Yeah. I had to learn. I had to learn
who is
French.
This guy?
That guy is much nicer than I am.
Yeah, the women at the bakery. I mean, it was no English there at all.
Do you speak French?
No. That was the thing. So, but I think they thought it was endearing that I was trying.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I did basic French.
Yeah. And it wasn't a touristy area, I don't think.
Not at all, no.
Did they ask you? I mean, because this is something that maybe if you walked into a room, people would say, "I bet that guy's a musician or an artist."
Oh,
you know,
and
you both of you have, you know, you're very arty. But walking into the village, do people question? Oh, what are you here for? Are you artists?
Yeah, I don't. They didn't really care.
Yeah,
you know, it was
so
weird.
You're beret.
Yeah,
but I think it's.
Yeah.
I think the town had kind of. It was a military town in the First World War, and there's this huge military school that kind of stands in the center of the village, and all of the boys went off to World War One, and not a single one came back.
So it was all women and kind of reinvented children.
Itself, and then it was empty for a long time, and all these hippies moved in and bought properties and turned it into like an artistic type destination, which is why Robert Crumb moved there town.
But it's not overtly, it's not like gentrified at all.
It's a sleepy little French town, isn't it? But with those kind of inclinations towards, you know, there's little art galleries that some locals run. And so it was a really special place that we kind of just happened upon, you know.
Yeah.
So what would be, thinking of wearing it on your sleeve. Is there a song on a Hippolyte that you feel wears that space on its sleeve that's imprinted the most with, say, that house or that space?
I think for me it would be In the Night Kitchen.
I was going to say,
it just feels like it just takes me all the way back.
I think,
you know, to the river swims and the nature. Well,
and I think we sampled, like, well, we did a lot of field recording there. And I think that one has actual sounds from
outside. Yeah, it's got the frogs outside. And the ducks and the... Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say that one.
Let's hear In the Night Kitchen. This is from Hippolyte by Drinks. And then we've also got Kate and Tim have some music they're going to be sharing. And very excited to hear what's up. More will be revealed and more will be veiled. It's CelsiusDrop.blog.com with Drinks. Thank you. Tim and Kate walk down the path to the croissant shop once again. Bonjour. Bonjour. That was In the Night Kitchen from Drinks Hippo Light. Were you doing a lot of cooking there?
We're like kicking.
Yeah, I cooked a lot. Huh?
Yeah, we ate the cook every night. Hmm. Yeah.
Oh, we did?
Yeah. Huh. Didn't we?
I did.
You did. Yeah, you did a lot of cooking. Yeah.
You know, we're all in it together.
Oh yeah, I wasn't a cook then.
Did you learn to cook there?
Not there, no.
Afterwards?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Hmm. Right? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
That does that song. You do feel the atmosphere, and the field recordings, of course, add to that. Was there something that, as you were making Hippo Light, that was totally unexpected within the process that was different for either of you, that different from your solo work or from Hermits on a Holiday, that you kind of went with the flow of?
I think
Jinx.
Hey.
There was a... It was so relaxed, which is different, I think, right? It was a very laid-back feeling.
I don't think I'd ever made anything before where you can... Like, I forgot that everything else existed genuinely. It sounds like a romantic cliche, but we were so... Like, our phones were just not on us anymore, and we were in this bubble. And kind of nothing really penetrated that, which is so... I mean, that's kind of what you want when you're trying to make something, isn't it? You know, you don't want any exterior kind of influence or doubt or, you know, to be able to make something like you would when you were a child, you know, where you're just trying to satisfy yourself and stoke out the person you're working with.
Yeah.
And that was... Yeah, that was really quite remarkable that we were able to really close the windows to the outside world.
And there was a good, almost round robin aspect to it where we'd lay something down, even just to as an idea, and then walk away and go make coffee or toast or something.
Yeah,
and then the other person will kind of listen to it and maybe be like, oh, I'll add like a little violin part on here. And then keep going back and forth, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, we were there to make the record, weren't we? So it was, there was no other kind of distractions of having to go meet someone, even for a coffee, or it was just very much as in that bubble.
Yeah.
And then Steve, our friend, arrived to kind of record everything properly that we'd been writing and demoing. And
there's like bits of cheese everywhere and crumbs and bread.
Yeah, Robert's crumbs. Robert's crumbs were there.
Robert's crumbs.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting. I think that many humans are kind of built with a bit of self-doubt or anxiety. I'm for sure, you know, and I think that as you're young and you're in, say, school, and you're worried about maybe what you're wearing or what people think of you. But then I feel as you get older, you start to realize everybody's more worried about themselves than you. If you walked in a room naked, it might take a while. Maybe a little. It depends. But I think people are kind of self-absorbed. And I think that when you have that opportunity, like you mentioned, everybody's trying to get a hold of me.
Yeah.
If you do take the effort to sort of extract yourself from the buzz of that world, things go on without you. But then you can focus and do something maybe so much greater than you would if you had to deal with that kind of buzz and that kind of static.
Yeah, I think so. And like you're saying, it's more kind of this idea that often, you know, when you're making a record or you're, you know, whatever, you kind of... You almost invent it yourself, don't you? This kind of exterior, these voices of like, well, I wonder what they're going to say about this. And I wonder, and which was, it was just kind of remarkable that I genuinely, until like Steve months later sent us the finished album, didn't really think, it's like, we're gonna have to release this, aren't we?
Yeah.
Because it was really just for us up until that point, you know, which I think I can kind of hear that in
yeah, there was
the
no
record to me. It's like for
there was no real pressure on it, you know, with deadlines or any of that. So maybe that helped with it as well.
And had you experienced anything of that sort before? Had you experienced kind of a space that allowed for that in your recording of solo records or
A little bit on Crab Day, because it was maybe the first time I'd gone residential with a record, and you know, everyone's there, no one goes home at night, and you know, so you kind of have that. But also I think there's just exterior kind of voices and whatnot kind of creep in, and you know, there are people involved who are thinking about other things and are drawn to other things as well, and it kind of, it's hard to keep a hold of just keeping it within the bubble maybe. But this was like, it was like being on another planet, I think, which was real nice.
Any thoughts of going to perform in this town?
Oh, we talked about it.
We tried to on our little European tour, but it's just pretty hard to pull it off financially in the middle of a tour. And at that time of year, I think it was tricky because it was November. But I'd love to at some point. It's a really, really remarkable little village. And the best thing was the functionality of having to go to the river two or three times a day because it was so hot.
Wow.
And just swim to kind of...
Yeah. It was so cool down. Hot in the day.
Yeah.
That's all you
could
do. We
would wake up in the early morning.
Get a coffee.
Bring coffee to the river and sit on the beach and go in the water just so you'd be cooler to go on with the day. Because it was like... brutally hot,
like real hippos.
It was like we were actually like hippos.
Instead of these fake hippos you hear about.
It's true.
So the connection of you guys musically, this is your second album. You had Hermits on Holiday in 2015. That was released on Birth Records, your label, Tim. Yep. And now Hippo Light came out in April on Drag City. Musically, you guys both have your own worlds, but this comes together as a shared experience. You're both music freaks and involved in, you know, different music worlds, loving to listen. How much of sharing of music do you do, kind of playing songs for each other that you love? Or is there an exchange like that that's active? Or is it just more of a fluid, you know, it's there?
I don't think. I think probably a collaboration, or the way we work, is more of a mindset maybe towards music more than it is sharing. I feel like we just are around each other enough to kind of just be playing music together.
Yeah.
But
beyond kind of specifically saying this is for a record, though, is music kind of a functional part of your, or utilitarian part of your time together?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I reckon we listen more to instrumental music these days when we're together.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Well, no, it's not true. Well, yeah, I guess so. I don't know.
Well, let's make music part of our atmosphere right now.
Yeah.
So we've got something lined up from Aksak Mabul, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anything you want people to know about this, or should we dive?
I love it very much.
And that
it's
is
exciting
enough.
To me. Yeah.
All right, folks, stay tuned. Here we go. Here comes some Aksak Mabul, as selected by Drinks, who are in the studio right here. Sounding great. Can you illuminate us about some of the tunes that you just shared?
Yeah. So it was Sak Sak Mabul.
Let's go. We'll go most recent to back because I don't want to say our listeners have short attention spans or that their brains, but the beauty,
radio fashion,
the beauty of each subsequent song sometimes, you know, just kind of washes everything else away.
So
what did we just hear?
The last song was a band called Blurt, who were an art punk band from the UK. Mm.
I loved it.
And it's a song called Trees.
Great band name as well.
Yeah, well, there was some confusion where JT, our friend who plays drums in Drinks, he's in the studio, and he thought I was saying Blur, and it blew his mind. He thought it was Alex playing a wheel of cheese with a straw, but it was actually a saxophone. And then I played Rosa Yemen, LaRue's Barambika. It's one of my favourite EPs ever, Rosa Yemen EP.
And where is Rosa Yemen from?
It's Lizzie Duclos.
Lizzie Mercier Duclos. Wow, interesting.
It's an alter ego of hers.
Amazing.
But it's a bonkers little EP, but I love it so much. And then Anna Domino, who I recently got into. I'd never...
Yeah, we're trying to hunt her down.
You are?
Well, yeah.
Oh. Anna.
Are we?
Where is
can
she?
Can you hear us?
Well, we talked about... because I'm doing the Marfa Miss collaboration thing.
Oh, you're trying to hunt it down.
We talked about it. Yeah. And we're doing a collaboration, and Keith, the Mexican Summer, wanted to have a female vocal.
Yeah.
Or like we would write songs. So we thought, oh, I wonder what Anna Domino's doing nowadays.
It's actually Keith who turned me on to her as well.
Oh, so there you go. Full circle.
There you go.
He sure is pushing this Anna Domino.
Yeah.
Keith Abramson.
What's going on, Keith?
Anna Domino.
I love. And there's another song that you're obsessed with called Land of My Dreams, but it's a cover.
I love it. It's Aretha Franklin did it. I don't think she wrote it, but very different from the original.
It's beautiful. Song.
Land of My Dreams.
It's mostly the lyrics, I think, that are the same.
And the melody.
And the and the chords.
And then the one before that was Colleen, Winter Dream, which is beautiful, beautiful track. It's totally transportive. And Meredith Monk and Don Preston, Beginning, which you played me many years ago and I fell in love with. And then Sak Mabul, which... is just an incredible long tune, great for DJing, because you can go for a wee.
That's a selling point of a DJ set.
Yeah.
You know, could not like a dance party. Come, urinate. It's going to be the greatest ever.
Urinate, smoke.
Glistening stalls await you. It's like the new Paradise Garage.
Yeah.
When did you guys first meet each other? I know that's a very obvious question, but it's very important.
Yeah. I mean, it was years ago, isn't it now?
2012, was it?
Yeah, you supported me at a show in...
Yeah, McCabe's Guitar Shop.
Yeah.
You know, I've never been to a show there, or have I? But I was wondering, as people are playing there, are the guitars kind of resonating? Are the strings? Oh. Do you hear, like if you walk along the wall, would you hear it?
I don't think so. That'd be nice.
You got to get the resonant frequency of,
sympathetic resonance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a thing.
So that show was happening and you were drawn together.
Yeah.
In the guitar shop.
Lots of important meetings that night, I guess.
Yeah.
Over drinks?
No, we barely spoke. I think Tim growled at us and we all thought he was really scary.
See, grumpy guy.
Bunch of like Welsh kids going, oh, he's so scary. I think he barked at us or something.
I did, yeah.
Get out of here. Woof, woof, woof.
Oh, hello. Nice to meet you. D-O-double-G.
And that's kind of how it went down.
Yeah.
And then when I moved to Los Angeles, I think we tried to meet you for coffee.
And there's more growling and barking.
He didn't turn up.
Oh yeah, this is a good story because I don't.
He was chained to the.
I don't remember this at all, but supposedly, what happened?
You did. Hugh arranged to meet you for coffee.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just moved to LA. We're like, oh, we need, you know, some friends. Tim's cool. I'm sure, you know, we hang out with him. And arranged to meet him at a coffee shop, and he stood us up. Huh? Very cool move. Like, just further solidifying, wow, this guy's so mysterious and cool. So, you know, and then we had lots, we actually managed to
What were you doing?
I don't know.
Maybe you were
just
there.
Just watching us smoking.
Yeah.
Well, look at sitting in the corner.
I'm going to play them like a piano. And then I ended up playing guitar for White Fence, I think. And it was like a nice, soft entry into us working together. We'd spoken about it, I think, before.
Yeah.
But often you speak about things like that because you have a, you know, mutual, I won't use the word admiration, is that too strong? Just check
mutual
you're comfortable
admiration.
With it.
I'm comfortable with okay. this, yeah.
Chain him up, JT. And it doesn't always work, does it, collaborating? Even if you do really like each other's music, it takes a certain, I don't know, synergy, to use a horrible business word. But
vertical integration. Inverting the spectrum of supply and demand chains.
Yeah. So we went on that tour, and we just immediately afterwards got into a studio or a rehearsal spot together and started to try and write. And it was lovely. I think we both were kind of looking for a similar kind of outlet at the time. Weren't we?
Yeah, I think we both at the very same time were not weary, but a little maybe, and not bored. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
I think just needed a reboot and kind of to be re-energized by
I think
someone else. And
simultaneously have been working on our own music for so long that this was, and we were both in the same mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I think it was able to work really well.
Yeah, it's like a really good slap in the face.
Yeah.
How long has White Fence been happening?
I guess technically, like since 2009.
Okay.
And it just started as I was just recording at home in my apartment, in my room. And I thought they were just demos, really. And then I just all of a sudden had a compilation of maybe like 20 songs. And then my brother, and I put it on a CDR, gave it to my brother. And then he showed this guy, Eric, from San Francisco, who had a label called Make a Mess, and he's like, "Oh, I'm gonna put this out." And I was like, "What? Really? Okay." And then that's what.
Did he make a mess of it?
And
you've been making a mess ever since. The newest mess is available in January. I have to feed Larry's Hawk on Drag City Records.
Exactly. Yeah. I was talking to someone recently about drinks. Oh, it's the Weirdo Music Forever Instagram. And I was thinking about how I was like remembering how we started drinks, and how I think it's a very special thing how we both felt the same at the same time. We had been, I'd been doing White Fence records, you'd been doing your records, and we just felt like, oh god, like this, I feel stuck maybe or something. And that was, it felt like a good I don't know.
Has it helped propel some of your other, kind of the energy within your solo projects?
Yeah, definitely. I think it tapped into something where I stopped caring about superficial or stupid things. And I just was like, I felt more true to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you helped bring that out of me.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
What was the process when you guys went to France? The daylight came, you saw this amazing place, and then how long before you started actually recording in this space in France?
There was a lot of
calibrating. Whoa.
Sorry, Grandad. Tim just got really old.
It's all that barking. It takes a lot out of you.
God, it's a lot of calibrating.
Recalibrating.
What if your voice never went back?
I know.
State? It could be amazing. You'd be like, wow, okay, we got to recalibrate again.
Yeah.
Tune everything a lot lower.
Yeah, I guess we were just getting used to the environment and kind of not having any contact to the outside world. Also, Brexit had just happened, not to talk about that, but it was kind of a strange, made me feel quite strange, especially being in France and going, this is incredible, you know, this is amazing, and knowing that this awful kind of thing had happened. Yeah. So there was some kind of recalibrating personally going on. And I don't know, it kind of took us some time to get into a routine of going, you know, to the river and feeling at home in the place. And then we,
Was there a window? You know, did you know we have to kind of stop at this point?
There was a couple windows in the, in the house.
Oh, dear.
Hold on, his mic too. Let me just cut this off.
Yeah, I guess our friend, you know, it was great because our friend was flying out on the last week to record everything. I think without that, we possibly would have, it would have just turned into a writing session.
So the first part was forming, and then your friend
Steve
came out to actually record. And so all the recording happened once he got in that space.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we had been demoing kind of a lot.
Yeah, I guess so, and making little loops and stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know if we'd have had the... Without him turning up, I think we'd have just swam in the river and eaten.
There is a wonderful loopy element in a great way, repetitive, kind of hypnotic, off-kilter, but its own kilter, it seems. Like it's an interesting rhythmic, even within the lyrics of vocals. And you mentioned earlier, you might record some layers and then take a pause and decide to add something else. How does the loop kind of element work within what you're doing? Are you recording? Do you get into kind of, you know, repetitive kind of mechanisms and then see where that goes? Or
I don't. I feel like Sometimes. The loops were kind of made with Steve, though, weren't they? You know, as like almost like a framework for the little bits that we'd been working on our own, and then we'd kind of create these loops and have him, you know, engineer whilst we were finding percussive things in the house to kind of put together in lieu of, you know, not having drums.
Yeah. So most of the percussion came from
just the house.
making things and having, you know, obviously hitting things.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no,
without minds.
Was it hitting a wheel of cheese with a straw?
Yeah, blowing through
And
playing a baguette like a trumpet. It's pretty out.
Penguin chocolate.
You could be sponsored by it's like, you know, some people have like Zildjian, right? You could be like
it was very kind of, it felt like assemblage, you know, of things that we'd been recording whilst we were there by ourselves, but really having Steve to come and help us build a framework to kind of hang it all on, you know.
Let's hear another song from the record before we hop into another song from your selections. Is there a piece on here that is maybe in the percussive cheese, straw, baguette realm that you feel?
Orchestra's got that cheese loop, isn't it?
Yeah.
Baby bell.
Yeah, the brie.
Yeah.
The brie sound.
Yeah.
Brie sound. But let's try to hear.
Which one?
Is it called Orchestra? No, I don't think so. Maybe that was a working title.
It's called something else.
It's called something else.
What's it called, JT?
Greasing Up,
is it? Greasing
Up. You know, it's funny. That's exactly what I was thinking. Greasing Up seems very brie laden.
Yeah. I might grease up now.
Oh, God. Play the track.
If I decide to come back to life, come back to life. If I decide to be white, I motion and I, cousins on side,
if I rage at I'm creasing up. We are leaving.
When you were coming up in Wales, at what point were you starting to play shows? Was that early on?
I mean, I guess I must have been about 24, maybe. Mm. You know.
Boom, boom, boom. Slap bass.
I'm playing a show right now.
And was it immediately supportive and a space that had lots of options of places to play? Yeah, I know there's a lot of great musicians and bands.
Yeah, it's kind of a really generous and supportive scene, you know, in Wales.
How did you meet Griff from Super Furry? Welcome to Dublab, and
thank you.
Answer my question, thank you.
The good thing is, my role now can switch to sidekick at a king guffaw.
So you're just my
sidekick.
How did I meet Griff? What was that?
Whoa.
Oh.
Whoop. Is that an Amber Alert?
I think it's Griff calling Amber Alert. The show. Oh.
I don't know. Is that the emergency broadcast system? You know what? It could be the emergency broadcast system.
Yeah.
Oh.
That was Griff.
That was Griff. He called.
Saying don't, yeah.
Don't talk about me.
Please don't go. Don't go.
I'm trying to think, just through mutual friends, you know.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, growing up in Wales, I was a huge fan of the Super Furry Animals, and the Super Furry Animals and the Gorkies, I think, are instrumental in kind of, you know, there's a really incredible Welsh music scene, and there's no kind of style necessarily other than people, I think, feel free to do whatever they want because of, you know, bands like the Gorkies and the Furries who were kind of, they existed during the whole Britpop explosion, but they had this kind of like...
But I think the trickle-down effect that... is really important.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah, I mean, breaking open and probably turning people's gaze a bit towards Wales in a different way and maybe for the young bands.
Yeah, just to kind of, I mean, they were definitely, you know, masters of their own universe, you know. And the Furries were doing bonkers stuff that I don't think anyone would dare to do now, you know, like... buying a tank and, you know, during Glastonbury whilst I can't remember who was playing on the main stage, but they drove the tank with really loud techno music playing into the crowd, you know.
This was also a point where there was a lot more money floating around.
So you could buy a tank. You know, I don't think you'd get the same purchase if you with a scooter.
No. What would be the if you guys say somebody came to you, say things changed and there was suddenly everybody was, you know, getting these huge advances, what kind of outlandish thing would drinks buy? What would be the either the stage prop or just the far out, or would it be modest?
I don't know. I don't think either of us are very lavish, are we?
Yeah.
We'd probably just nicer hotels.
Yeah.
Huge turtleneck.
Maybe a huge turtleneck.
Just a huge turtle, one of the rare ones.
Yeah. You
know. We were speaking earlier about things that maybe, you know, you were saying that you keep things behind the curtains. But one thing that you were telling me was that you're also a furniture designer, right? You did a residency making furniture, right?
Yeah, I took a year off to go and live in the middle of nowhere, really, in the Lake District, which is insanely beautiful, and go to this it's in the north of England, in a national park called the Lake District. It's very beautiful, and went to a small furniture school where it was kind of master craftsmanship to learn how to build and then also design furniture.
And was that something that's been a long time kind of interest?
Yeah, I think so. And I think I'd reached a point where I was in, you know, that kind of cycle of you finish a record and then you're already talking about making your next record. And sometimes you kind of just want to get off the train and take stock and actually have, you know, make a record for the right reason, which is because you feel, you know, like you want to and it's something that you need to do. So it was... I think, yeah, all in all, it kind of, you know, one, music and, like, the discipline of furniture making and that kind of craftsmanship, they kind of ended up informing each other, which is always nice to have that kind of new perspective on things.
It's always interesting to think about what is connected and what is totally separate, you know, because there can be hobbies or crafts that you're involved in that are completely separate, or they can kind of commingle and inspire each other and overlap in interesting ways. Furniture is very physical, you know, music is more ephemeral. I mean, it can be pressed on records, but it's, you know, sound floating in the air. But there's something tangible about a piece of furniture. Is there a type of furniture that you're most excited about?
I love chairs, but I'm particularly interested in, like, chairs that architects have designed. There seems to be a real strange, brutal absurdity to them. Like Lina Bobindi and Bobardi, I think. What's her name? Lina, Brazilian architect. But she used to make these incredibly beautiful, but they were kind of a little bit bonkers. Chairs, you know.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
I think is the name.
Thank you. Yeah. And, I'm recently kind of a new fan love for Frank Lloyd Wright, who I had no idea, but he was born in the town. He was born in Wales.
Amazing.
Close to the same town where I went to secondary school.
What is he of Welsh heritage, or was it family?
His mother was Welsh, and he was born, I think he lived there till he was three, and then he moved to Massachusetts. I'm going to say that quietly because I might be wrong. Massachusetts.
Yeah, and spent time right here designing some beautiful houses.
Some of the, some
amazing.
Yeah, what's the name of the house?
There's the Hollyhock House and some... It looks
like a Mayan temple.
Yeah, there's a few of the Mayan revival styles. Hollyhock and the one that's right across from it that was in Blade Runner and different things. Yeah. But there's a lot of interesting... Yeah. Do you, Tim, have hobbies that are completely separate from music?
Well, I like to do art. But I don't know if that's a hobby, you know, but...
And I mean, not to say that furniture, maybe furniture making is second profession, or it's a holy venture.
Yeah.
It feels like a dirty word, hobby, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But I don't think it should be.
Oh, yeah, we talked about this.
Are there other passions? Are there other passions that you like?
You don't like it when I use the word hobby.
No, we talked that. I like passions.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many passions?
Tell us about
you
your
have?
Passions.
That's great.
What gets you out of bed in the morning, dude?
Mostly just painting and art as the, I put that much energy, the same amount of energy that I would music, I do that as well.
MMA?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and MMA.
On the side.
Mixed martial arts.
Wall paint.
Mixed Master Mike.
I'm going to paint you all over the canvas.
Yeah.
Watch out, brother.
No, I don't really do... I don't do MMA, for the record.
Do you... You don't do it for the record, but on tour you do it?
I like baseball.
Playing?
Uh-huh.
Nice.
Yeah. My brother... Noet? My brother plays... there's a Mission Street in San Francisco, Mission Street baseball team.
Yeah.
And they do... It's kind of like a ragtag bunch of, like, dudes and... I don't know when it started, but they have uniforms and stuff, and they practice every Sunday, and sometimes I go and play. But what's interesting, though, is that they...
It's all interesting.
Okay. But they are
hopefully
put together,
for the listeners out there.
Are put together out in Radioland.
We've spoken about furniture.
And now
we've talked about the weather. Now we're talking about
sports.
Baseball.
No, okay. This is the interesting thing. They're put together enough where they actually play San Quentin Like, they go to San Quentin Prison and play their team, whatever it is. I forget their name.
Is it...
Oh,
it's the Giants. It's like the San Quentin Giants or something. Wow.
It's better. I mean, there could be some other names that they might be freaked out by. Maybe they had the ideas were heavy. The or maybe the San Quentin Innocents. They
could there you say go. That like, yes. The San Quentin, I didn't do it.
I didn't. Yeah. I mean, that's cool. It's great to be able to connect. I mean, it must be a little... Yeah, a little intimidating.
Yeah, it's a little sketchy, he said. I haven't done it. I don't think I'm ready to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool to have that sort of interaction. And
I think someone should make a documentary on that. I think it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe we should all do it now. Oh, what do you think, John? Yeah. Let's do it. So Tim had a question for you. Do you have any burning questions for Tim?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think
Ask away.
Do you think your guitar's too loud on stage a lot of the time?
This is a safe space. It's fine. Yeah.
Never.
No?
No.
Okay. That's all I had to ask.
It's true. You have a very quiet stage sound.
I just like to keep my hearing.
Let's hear should we hear the lightest, quietest sound on Hippolyte?
Oh, yeah.
What is the quietest?
The lightest, quietest?
The lightest, quietest song. What's a gentle song?
I don't know. Maybe.
Oh, no, I can't even.
There's one called Leave the Lights dark. Out.
Maybe. That's loud.
That's loud.
See, that's not light. Leave that's the lights not, out.
Yeah. Leave it out. Corner shops.
Blue from the Dark.
Blue from the Corner Dark.
Yeah, Blue
quiet.
From the Dark.
Oh, Blue
very
from
quiet.
The Dark is very quiet.
Yeah. I was playing this for my daughter this morning, who's 2, and she liked it.
Oh, that's nice. Good.
This one goes out to Maria. Maria, this one's for you, baby. You're definitely not listening, but it's okay. Softness in the sweetest way. You too can stir a little bit of that sugar into your tea with Hippolyte. Less calories, more soul. Coming your way on Drag City in the past, April 20th, 2018. Scoop it up. Tim Presley of White Fins. Kate Laban of Planet Earth and Beyond. I love that song.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
So, have you played in Wales with drinks?
Have we? Cardiff?
I don't know if we have, actually.
Oh, yeah, I don't think we have.
No, that's... But...
Hopefully.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much more drink stuff is on the cards.
Yeah,
this could be our last
this
show.
Could be our last...
This could be it. So,
this could be it, guys.
You know what? Yeah. You have one more chance. Possibly. Come tonight. Yeah. It is happening in Los Angeles. Sid the Cat presents at Pico Union Project. Only good things have been said about this place. And you can find out more information if you visit the internet and you knock on the door and put in drinks.
I Google it. You
can Google it. But actually one place, if you go to dublab.com/schedule, you're probably on Dublab right now. You'll see Frosty with Drinks, Celsius Drop, and there's a little link right there. Or if you go to, I think we put it up, dublab.com/events. I'm going to check right now. No, but we will. dublab.com/events. We'll have it there, but you can also just Google it. Pico Union Project with Drinks, and that is this evening. Tell us about who is playing with you.
We have Summer, a dear friend who we both work with quite a lot. He owns Seahorse Studios downtown. He has a solo project called Conscious Summary, and so he'll be opening. And then Stella Musgawa and Boom Bip have
beef.
A duo called Beef, yeah. It's the...
It's awesome. It's like early house techno sounds, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can go wrong with that pairing.
Yeah.
Yeah, super.
Yeah. Yeah, they're both very, very good.
So it should be good.
You can make your way down there. The show starts at 8 p.m. The doors are at 8 p.m.
Yeah, they're playing.
Oh, dear.
I could do this all day.
But when it comes night, it's serious business. Expect no. Everybody's going to say, why does that guy look so angry on the stage, that dour gentleman? Well, I hope that you can make it out there. We'll probably do a ticket giveaway. I don't want to make promises, but
yeah,
I'm
going to
do it anyway. We should. We'll do a ticket giveaway. So keep your eyes on the Dublab social channels today, and we can bless you with some tickets. Speaking of blessing you, we're going to give you a little bit of a bonus here. We're going to hear a song called Lorelei. This is from the forthcoming album from White Fence. It's called I Have to Feed Larry's Hawk. It's coming on Drag City in January. But the first jam is floating out now. Thanks to both of you for coming in today.
So
really
much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Enjoyed it so much. So here we go. Lorelei from White Fence.
Conversation was produced by Dublab, a nonprofit radio station broadcasting live from Los Angeles since 1999. Sound editing and theme song by Matea Bain. For more programming, visit dublab.com. And thank you for listening.